Most likely as a subcommittee. We appreciate your patience and hope your Wednesday is going well. Sorry about starting a little bit late. Was over with Ms. Mitchell, Mr. Bell at CSAC, and I know Mr. Bell will be coming. He has another speaking engagement here in just a bit. Just for some housekeeping items, number one is we do not have a consent calendar. We have two items. One will have some robust discussion. The other should be fairly straightforward, at least as if we're looking at history as the best predictor. But why don't we get straight into our first bill from the Senate Committee on Governance and Finance. And again, thank you all for being here. Let's invite Senator Lara to be able to present Senate Bill 567. We are going to be starting as a subcommittee. We'll pause to be able to get a quorum when we have four members present. Want to say that Mr. Lara has been working on this bill for quite some time. He's taken his own author amendments that have significantly diminished the value of the bill as well, and appreciate all the work. No, truly, appreciate all the work in regards to the revenue estimate. I apologize, not the actual value it served. Thank you. The revenue estimate. Thank you so much. But, Senator Lara, before I actually butcher this any longer, let's turn it over to you, sir, for a presentation.
Thank you. I hope this bill's still valuable. No, thank you. I'm joking. SB 567 will close three loopholes that benefit millionaires and ensure high-income earners pay their fair share in taxes. Far too long, our tax code has unfairly favored the wealthiest Californians, while middle-class families continue to struggle. Even billionaire investor Warren Buffett has famously said that he paid only 17.4% of his taxable income in federal taxes, a lower percentage than any of his employees. Wealthy Californians have financed a sophisticated and astonishingly effective apparatus for shielding their fortunes. These tax breaks allow millionaires and powerful corporations to avoid paying their fair share of taxes that would otherwise go into our state coffers. Well, with President Trump, we know that this would only get worse. Just last week, President Trump released his tax plan that would give a massive tax cut for wealthy. Experts say that almost 50% of the tax cuts will go to the top 1% earners. SB 567 would do three things: eliminate the basis step-up option on inherited properties for taxpayers with the annual incomes above $1 million. Wealthy Californians shouldn't be able to turn a family home into a tax shelter, but current law allows Californians who inherit property to pay taxes on only a fraction of its value. This bill will also prohibit corporations from deducting executive compensation above $1 million from their income. Wealthy CEOs earn millions of tax-free under bonus packages that cost taxpayers billions of dollars a year. Finally, SB 567 will impose a higher charitable remainder requirement of 40% The opposition argues that this bill breaks conformity with federal tax law. However, it is now more important than ever for California to close tax loopholes used by the wealthy and lead the nation in providing a fair tax system for all. According to the Public Policy Institute of California, income inequality has been growing for decades and remains higher than at any point before the Great Recession. Investing in our education system, infrastructure, and health system will reduce the high income inequality and allow more people to contribute to the economic success of our state. Even when California is highly reliant on high income tax payers to fund public services, California still enjoys being one of the largest economies in the world, and California-based companies surpass their competitors in the U.S. by most measures of performance favored by investors. You will hear also from the opposition that California taxes are too high and that wealthy Californians already pay too much. In fact, California's wealthiest 1% pays a lower percentage of their income in state and local taxes than the poorest 20%. You will also hear that SB 567 unfairly targets family businesses that transfer the business upon death of any other family members. The tax break on inherited property will only continue for all those earning $1 million or more dollars. When we talk about small businesses, the average self-employed person earns around $56,000. So we are really talking about the biggest family businesses. It's time for the wealthiest California Americans and Californians and big corporations to pay their fair share of taxes when they take unfair advantage of the many loopholes in the tax code that the rest of us eventually have to pick up the tab. Even those that are opposition to this bill pick up the tab for these loopholes. They might be willing to do that, but my constituents and I'm not willing to pay any further. It is time for us to close these loopholes and create a more equitable tax system. With that, I respectfully ask for I vote.
Thank you so much, Senator Lara. Before we get into testimony, if it works for the committee, we'd like to be able to establish a quorum. We'd like to be able to go to a roll call with Ms. Lanchester, please.
McGuire.
Here.
McGuire present. Wynn.
Here.
Wynn present. Bell. Hernandez, Hertzberg, Lara.
Here.
Lara present, Morlock.
All right, a quorum has been established by the committee. Thank you so much, Ms. Lanchester. Would like to be able to welcome testimony by those who are here at the table. We'll just ask that you please keep your testimony to 3 minutes, and I'll give you a 30-second prompt. We welcome you.
Okay, I'm Diane Dethridge. I'm the legislative director for Franchise Tax Board, and I'm just here to answer any technical questions.
Thank you so much. We're grateful for your time. Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning. Danny Kando-Kaiser on behalf of California Tax Reform Association. We are here in support. Briefly, we are in support of this effort to repeal the major loopholes in the tax system, as the senator outlined. We greatly appreciate the elimination of the stepped-up basis rule, as well as the author's interest in charitable remainder trusts. And one amendment we would suggest, again, as our letter outlines, is to suggest that the section is also make sure that there is out-of-state reporting. And we continue to work with the author's office. Look forward to working with them some more. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. We would now like to welcome any additional testimony. If you could please step forward to the microphone. Those who are in support, if you could please state your first and last name in your organization. Those who are in support, please come forward at this time. All right, why don't we bring it back? We're now going to welcome those who are in opposition or have challenges. We welcome you to the table, please. We'll have you come back. Thank you. So we'll have one individual who will lead off when it comes to those who are opposed. That individual will have an unlimited time. We'll then ask that those will have two additional, that will have 3 minutes, and we'll give you a 30-second prompt as well, just to make sure that we are fair and equitable here. So who would like to be able to lead us off?
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, Chris McKaylee on behalf of the Computing Technology Industry Association. We met early on with Senator Lara, and we do appreciate his elimination of one of the provisions. I think, first of all, our fundamental concern is that when you are changing items of conformity and the deduction as an ordinary and necessary business expense for executive compensation is hardly a loophole. loophole is, you know, utilizing something that may or may not have been intended. This provision was enacted by the federal government in 1993, and I'm not aware of instances in which people have abused this particular provision, so I'm deeply troubled by the characterization of it being a loophole. I would point out that this provision applies to publicly traded corporations, and an executive committee or a compensation committee, including at least two outside directors, have to set forth these provisions in terms of performance-based compensation, and it's disclosed to the shareholders of those corporations. And this has been around for nearly a quarter of a century, and we think is working just fine. We should not decouple ourselves from the federal tax code. It requires taxpayers to essentially include two books, one for state purposes and one for federal purposes, but we would like to see this provision eliminated from the bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kaley. Mr. Albiani, you have 3 minutes. I'll give you a 30-second prompt.
No problem. Dennis Albiani with the Family Business Association of California. And we've testified on many different issues that have to do with succession. And the provision in here that we have the most concern with is the elimination of the ability to step up your basis on assessment values when property is passed through to the next generation. One of the biggest impediments to succession of the family business is tax law, and you have to pay taxes with cash, yet you get stuff passed through through the estate, and it can be, it can be significant. But that creates an issue that you might have to sell off the asset to be able to pay the taxes as well. And so we're very consistent on this issue, and we have concerns that that will, again, create an impediment to the succession of businesses as they go forward. So thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I'm grateful you're here. Welcome. How you doing?
Mr. Chair and members, Jennifer Brewer on behalf of the California Chamber of Commerce. We also have concerns as stated by the previous witnesses, but we would also like to point out that if we continue to burden and target the high income earners, they already pay 48% of the taxes in our general fund, and if we continue to layer on more and more taxes on there, we're concerned about their ability to transfer locations and move out of our state and the general fund loss that would be created if they actually do move out of our state with the layering of taxes that we have. So for those additional reasons, we are opposed.
Thank you. We're grateful for your testimony. We'd like to be able to see if there are any other folks here in the audience that would like to be able to come forward and speak in opposition of the bill, or if you have challenges, we welcome you to the microphone. If you could just please state your first and last name and your organization. At this time, if you can please step forward to the microphone. Not all at once. Hot dang. All right, we're going to be bringing it back to committee for discussion and debate. Who would like to be able to kick us off? We're going to go to Mr. Morlock.
I'd like to line up in opposition of the bill.
Want me to stand? Hey, see, there we go. You're looking good there.
I'll just give some thoughts, and then I have some questions for the author. I had the privilege of working for a CPA firm for 18 years, and my first career was a partner. So I was a CPA and also a certified financial planner, and did a lot of income tax planning, did a lot of estate tax planning, and did a lot of charitable gift planning, did a lot of charitable remainder unit trusts, and had a lot of fun in that first career. So I'm sitting here and I'm kind of reacting as some of the others that I wouldn't call some of these three items loopholes. But I'm also really concerned about nonconformity. It really is a difficult thing when you have state law that differs dramatically from federal law, and it just creates some unique preparation issues, especially for the Franchise Tax Board. I mean, they got to figure out how some of this stuff is missing, even how to find it or audit it. One statistic was already given, but if the top 1% are contributing almost a third of the state's total revenues, this is just not one group you really want to upset, because it has such a major bearing on our total revenues. And I'm also concerned about the amount of compensation being paid by California corporations to their executives. It doesn't take much to move a corporate headquarters and to relocate to another state. Airbnb, we had a lot of fun with that. And what, their four owners live in San Francisco, but their employees live in Portland. And so I don't want to lose those four people when they do sell their shares, because we want the capital gains and we want those in California. So I'm nervous about the rule of unintended consequences, because the wealthy are so mobile, they could leave in a snap. This is an easy thing for them to do to change their domicile. So I'm also really concerned about eliminating the step-up in basis. It's a mind-blowing, for me as an accountant, it's a mind-blowing kind of proposal. A lot of people do wait till they pass away. It's actually an odd strategy, but you kind of wait for, like my folks, you know, why sell the house now? But now if you don't transfer the new basis at the date of death, you're gonna, I can't even imagine the unintended consequences of what's gonna happen with people moving property or doing things, I'm really nervous about that. So my questions, Senator Lara, I'm just curious about the $1 million in income. Those are the people that will be impacted by the inability to take the stepped up basis. So is that $1 million in that particular year, or is that $1 million over the last 5 years, or how do you get that threshold? So
it's $1 million a year, and if the it's a couple, it's $1 million each of them. So you're talking about the wealthiest of the wealthy,
right?
And I appreciate your concern for them greatly.
So is it for 5 years, 10 years? I mean, how long do they have to have earned the $1 million per year?
I don't know. That's a good question, and we'll look at that.
Okay, because you could manipulate your income. You could hold off selling stock.
You could do
all kinds of things. So if you time it, you know, if my father died this year, then I will not manipulate or do anything with my portfolio, so I can stay under $1 million in taxable income, so I don't lose the step up in basis. Right? So I'm just, right. That's what we do. We contrive. We try to figure out how to get around the tax code.
Right, and that's my concern, and I appreciate the concern of for the wealthy, and I know they will also figure out another way to be able to shelter their assets. But let me get back to you on that. I see what you're saying, and I don't know. I haven't really thought about that issue. So let me get back to you on that.
Okay. So I prepare tax returns. I'm assuming. I don't know. I haven't asked you, but have you ever prepared tax returns or done any tax work for clients?
No, I'm not I'm not an accountant.
Thanks. Too bad.
No. Okay.
Senator Moore. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Diane.
It's the adjusted gross income of the taxable year of the decedent's death. So the $1 million or $2 million would be
just in the year of death.
Yes, in the
year. Yeah. So I could manipulate. I could do things to. I could recognize losses. I could do a lot of things to make sure I get below $1 million. That's, you know, I have these problems.
No. Right. And I appreciate your concern for them. But I understand. I didn't think about the manipulation part and how you can actually kind of withhold your assets. So let me further tease that out.
Yeah, I can go to my boss for my company and say, I don't want to be paid this year. I mean, it's really simple. So yeah, well, not your death. It's the death of your parents, let's say, that you're going to inherit the property from. So my mom and dad are still alive, but if I could talk, you know, if I own the corporation, I would say, hey, no bonus this year. You know, just, and I can wait a week, get it the next year. And then I avoid this step up, this losing right. The step up. So the last question is, how does this all fit in with what Senator Hertzberg is doing? Is this part of what you're trying to do? Are we going to do this piecemeal, or are we going to do an overall plan? Because I'm having difficulty with this. If this is part of your deal, I'm having trouble with it.
The bill has my name on it, and I've been working on this issue. I'm more than happy to speak with Senator Hertzberg on his efforts and support him in trying to bring some more parity in our tax structure. And so, look forward to working with him on his efforts.
I think it's fair to say, Senator Lara, is that...
intended. I did not mean to say that you were... I just want to know. You answered the question. You have not been collaborating, so...
I feel like I'm in court.
Well,
it's two parallel efforts.
Right, it's two parallel efforts.
Okay, I think I'm done. Right. But thank you for the bill, and thanks for shaking my world up. I mean, this is unbelievable. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Murlock. We'd like to be able to see if there are additional comments. Sure.
Just because I did tax planning. So you're saying, okay, now the interest has to be a minimum of 40% as opposed to 10. Well, there's a lot of reasons why you don't contribute more than the 10. For instance, you are, as well, Diane's here, you are limited on your charitable contributions. So the day you make a major planned giving gift to a university or to you know, how you set up the trust or how you do your planning, if your taxable income for the next 5 years is not large enough to absorb the carryover of your contribution deduction, then you're going to lose it permanently. And so that's why we are pretty precise on what we do with our planning and how much we transfer to a university. And if I lose it in 5 years, then I may not want to do it. But if I can do a nice gift every 5 years and work it out in my tax planning, then there's more potential for the UC system or the CSUs that might get major gifts. And I just see unintended consequences, Mr. Chair, on some of these things, because charitable gift planning is so fun, and it is such a great area. So that to start nibbling at it and foreclosing on opportunities, I just can't see how the ramifications would be very detrimental to a lot of our nonprofit community.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond to that. Yeah, you know, it, you're absolutely right. It is really fun, the charitable giving, especially for those families that use it to buy yachts, buy homes, and employ their children, and only be forced to spend 10% of that on the actual charity. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to get at as well. I understand that some of our most prestigious universities receive a lot of this money, which is not taxable. And so these are questions that we need to continue to tease out. But, you know, obviously we're trying to get at the folks that utilize these charitable tax to be able to continue to shelter their monies and be able to use it as a slush fund for their children and their family.
So you're just kind of mad at people that have been successful?
Aren't you? Are you mad at people that are using our tax system to be able to shelter?
There's 151,000 families in this state that are holding us up.
I would say the working people of California are holding us up.
They're holding us up. I mean, holding us up in a positive way, not like holding us up with a gun, but holding. They're sustaining this state, and I am so nervous about our tax system and how it operates and how we're so dependent on just a small community. And the last thing I want to do is message that they're not appreciated, that they're just another pocket of people that we can go after to generate revenues for the state. And I think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous. So I thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me.
Thank you so much. Do we have other comments, Mr. Hernandez? Then we'll go to the Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member. I don't disagree with what Senator Murlock is saying, and I appreciate the fact that we have individuals that are doing very, very wealthy in this state that are contributing. By all means, we don't want to let them, we don't want them to leave the state. We want them to stay here. But, you know, instead of talking about those individuals that are extremely, extremely wealthy, which seems to be, you know, the 1% that owns, what is it, 40, 50, 60% of the wealth, perhaps we should change the conversation. How do we increase those that are in the middle class? Because that's shrinking. That's shrinking. I mean, unfortunately, we're having to do bills like this because we don't have a sustainable working middle class. Why don't we start changing that conversation to increase that so that instead of having to rely on those few individuals that are creating wealth and contributing to the state, if we have this huge middle class, you know, whether it's through community college, CSU, UC, construction work, look at this new bond that we just passed that's gonna, yeah, we're being attacked for taxing our gasoline, but guess what? That's a huge economic driver in this state that we're gonna put people to work. Now we're gonna get a huge middle class that all of a sudden are gonna be paying taxes. They're gonna be contributing to the general fund. And then maybe we won't have to worry about going after those very, very wealthy people. But in the meantime, you know, I'm going to be supportive of this bill because I think we have a shrinking middle class, and we have an increase of individuals who are making excessive amounts of money at the expense of those individuals that need those jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. Why don't we go to the vice chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree. We should change the conversation. I mean, our middle class students are losing their scholarship. I don't hear anybody talking about it. The governor has made sure that it was not part of the May revise. You know, the way I look at it is we try to bring the low-income students up to middle class, but by the time they get to become middle class, their children are going to be pushed backwards. I think there's this discussion that we keep on talking about, and you know, I want to make sure we do help the low income because that's where I was. I mean, I was on welfare, I was on food stamps, but as you're helping someone like me get to be middle class, you're pushing my children backwards, and that's a discussion we don't talk about. And you know, we can talk about the wealthy and their slush funds. Well, let's talk about the president of the UC system. She was holding $178 million in slush funds. Why, a few weeks ago, they just increased 5%, or is it 2%, for which system it was, to our college students. I mean, I went to UC Irvine. It took me almost 10 years to pay off my student loan while I was working school. I was going to school full-time and working three jobs. That's the discussion we're not talking about. What I hate to see is as people are moving outward and upward, all we're doing is putting them backwards or putting their children backwards. I'm not saying that these individuals that, you know, that's been discussed on this bill will ever go backwards, but it's not helping us if we don't have that broader discussion. I don't know if there's any middle class left. Orange County was reported in the Register this week. To buy a home in Orange County, the average income for a family has to be $154,000. And you have to have a minimum income of $84,000 per household to be able to rent a place in Orange County. I mean, we're not the Silicon Valley, we're not San Francisco, we're just Orange County. I mean, if I was a single mom, I can't afford to live in Orange County with the salary that I have today. It just, that's where I don't think we have those discussions often. And I think we pick and choose, but yet I think our picking and choosing, though, another base gets eliminated and are punished. I don't want to see us do that. And you're right, Senator Hernandez, our middle class is disappearing very fast. I don't even know if there's many left anymore. Then let's champion. Let's ask the governor to put back the middle class scholarship. It's not picking and choosing one class over another. I think everybody should be able to advance. Everybody should have the opportunity. Every child should know that the sky is the limit. Regardless of where they live, regardless of their ethnicity, whether they speak English as a second language or not, because English was my second language, I think we should help everybody. And I think that's a discussion that we forget. And I appreciate the comments that are here. And maybe we can continue this discussion as we continue to move forward. The middle class is leaving. There's nothing left. There's nothing here. We can't afford it. Children are leaving the state. The next decade, more people retire in the state than they will be putting into the system. We talk about, you know, not having providers. Well, none of the residency students can afford to live here. But, you know, I think it's unfairly, we also in this committee, what I've noticed in the last 2 years is we always try to conform to federal government. We try to make it simple. So now we're not conforming anymore, we're going backwards. We're picking and choosing what we're conforming to. And it makes it more difficult regardless. I mean, our tax system is horrible already. Those are just my comments. And so I just hope that as we move forward, we don't pick classes to pick on, and we make sure we do need to be helping middle class every step of the way and the low income, and not just one over the other, because we should never choose. They're all important to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. I'd like to be able to see if we have any additional comments, questions. Please, Mr. Morlock. It's all good.
In the state of New Jersey, we had a billionaire move out
the New Jersey legislature had to hold a special session to figure out how to replace the tax revenues that were lost. They were like $143 million a year. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying I'd like to avoid that, and that's where my passion is. And I want to thank the author for the stimulating discussion.
Thank you so much. I have a few comments, but I wanted to be able to see if the committee had any additional comments or conversation. I appreciate the robust discussion on this issue. Just a couple issues, I think, on the California economy, we take a look at it. I think our economy continues to grow and is in the minority of states in the United States of America when it comes to a growing economy. We've gone from the eighth to the sixth largest economy in the world. We've actually grown the number of billionaires in the state of California since the recession has ended. And we are number one in job growth for two straight years. And when we take a look at what our economy contributes to the rest of America, our total GDP is 1/7 of everything that is generated in the U.S., and that's just California alone. Only the U.K., China, Japan, as well as Germany and the United States outnumber us. And by the way, we're number three in billionaires on the planet, United States, China, as well as the state of California. So while I think that we all know that we are vulnerable to ups and downs in our economy, I think when we take a look at some of the tax proposals that are being advanced, which are out of our hands, but at the federal level, trying to insulate this state as much as possible for what we believe could be some cloudy days ahead in our economy. And for as much as folks, and not saying it was done here today whatsoever, because it wasn't, for as many challenges that this state has, one of the brightest points that we have is our economy. We grew by $42.3 billion in the first three quarters of last year. You take a look at New York and Florida combined, they didn't grow that for the entire year last year. And it took us three quarters to be able to do that. I say all that is, look, I think the stats say there has never been a greater disparity between those who have and have not, whether it's the state of California or the United States. And I think that we can all agree that when we have a stronger middle class, our communities thrive. But one of the items that the Vice Chair had mentioned, I think it is a real challenge, particularly in coastal communities, is that just at the current minimum wage that we have now, you have to work three full-time jobs to be able to afford your average rent. Three full-time jobs. Two-thirds of the minimum wage earners in the state are women. And so I think that we need to look at all sides of the financial market, both those who are earning those lower wages, which is why, and I know that there are differences on this dais about this, why that there has been advancement on the issue of minimum wage, and why we need to continue to look at those higher bracket earners to be able to secure ourselves from what we may be seeing on the federal side. Just my thoughts and why I'm going to be supportive of the bill. But again, what I really appreciate about this committee is that coming to this from all directions and all stripes, and grateful for the conversation. I'm going to stop yapping and turn it over to the good senator from Long Beach and have closing comments.
Thank you. I appreciate the discussion as well and the concerns. And, you know, Senator Wynn and I have very similar stories and upbringings. And, you know, Senator Wynn, I agree with you on the UC and on President Napolitano and would support any efforts to rein in the UC. And as if you recall, I actually had a constitutional amendment to take away their autonomy. And I think it's time for us to revisit that. The fact is that when the UC was granted this autonomy, there was only one UC. Women weren't allowed to vote, and times have completely changed from then. And so I think it's time for us to revisit that, and I will support any effort to do that, and I've done that publicly, and I'll continue to do so. And your concerns about low-income students and the middle class is something that, you know, my family's living as well. The fact is that, you know, we have to be supportive of those measures. This bill does not get to those issues. We really want to make sure that the tax code is fair for everyone. And I appreciate the concern for millionaires leaving and the one percenters. The fact is that, you know, we are not New Jersey. We are much more robust here in California. Income inequality continues to grow and has been the largest in our history. And the fact is, you can't argue that the wealthiest in this state continue to pay the lowest amount of percentage of income and state local taxes. And that's the truth. And that is substantiated by the Public Policy Institute of California, which is very reputable. And for us, it's trying to get to the point of how do we allow our lower income and middle income families to be able to compete against these one percenters that have successfully sheltered their earnings and continue to use our tax code to keep more of the revenues. And I appreciate the concern about millionaires' children, but Ivanka Trump and Barron Trump are gonna be okay. And ensuring that, you know, we conform or not conform with the federal government, this is what we have to do now to protect ourselves. And, you know, we've always done that. We've made policy decisions to address inequalities and deficiencies within our tax code. And whether that means if we're gonna conform with federal government to ensure that we get a better return for California taxpayers, or we don't conform with the federal government to ensure that our California working families obtain a better tax return, then it is up for us to have those discussions in policy and be able to move whatever is appropriate to ensure that at the end of the day, working families get a better return and not just the wealthy in the state, and this is what I'm trying to do. And so, members, I appreciate the discussion, but I think, you know, we're going to continue to work on this issue. The fact is that we want to make sure that the tax code is equitable for everyone in California. Time and time again, those working class folks, those middle class folks and low income folks that we talked about today continue to pay more taxes than the top 1%. And so I want to just make sure we make it fairer for everybody across the state. And with that, respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lara. Is there a motion to advance the bill? All right, this is a motion by Senator Hernandez, a due pass to appropriations. Roll call vote, please. Ms. Lanchester.
McGuire.
Aye.
McGuire, aye. Wynn.
No.
Wynn, no. Bell. Hernandez.
Aye.
Hernandez, aye. Hertzberg.
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Lara.
Aye.
Lara, aye. Morlock. Morlock, no. You have 4-2.
All right, right now that is a 4-2. We're going to leave the roll open for Senator Bell to be able to come add on. Thank you again for the robust discussion and grateful for the committee's commitment as well to that. All right, we're going to be moving on to our second and final bill. This is Senator Newman. He's going to be advancing Senate Bill 503 relating to personal income taxes. I do not believe we have any opposition. I'm going to be
move
looking.
The bill.
Oh, my gosh. Madam Vice Chair, are you comfortable with on the text? We have a bipartisan group hug bill here right now. So we have a motion by Senator Hertzberg. We'll give a very quick presentation by Mr. Newman, quick by witnesses, and we're going to get this thing moved here quickly. So, Mr. Newman, if you could please give a much abridged version of your testimony, please. We have a motion on the floor.
I appreciate that.
Motion.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Senators.
Thank you so much. That was great. No, I'm kidding. Go right ahead.
I respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Newman. Let's go to our witnesses, please.
Hi, this is Ayanna Kibori, Interim Director of the California Arts Council, and I just wanted to thank Senator Newman for his leadership and the amendment to the bill and in support of us continuing to be on the donation fund.
Very grateful for your commitment to this important issue. Please.
Nothing to add.
Okay, thank you.
Chair and members, Kathy Mossberg with the California Association of Food Banks. Very much appreciate the author, the sponsors, as well as all of those involved at the FTB and Intuit in getting on this quickly. It is a loss for the food banks, but we know the problem has been fixed, and moving forward, we'll have conversations for this before it gets there. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Christy Baum on behalf of the California Professional Firefighters in solidarity and support.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Jennifer Fearing on behalf of Defenders of Wildlife, the Humane Society of the United States, and all of my other do-gooding wildlife and animal protection clients that have three funds that they care deeply about on the VCF. And thank you to the senator for amending the bill to protect them. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Brainerd with the Alzheimer's Association in support. And just want to say that since 1985, California taxpayers have donated over $20 million to fund Alzheimer's disease research in our state. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Rachel.
Steve Baker with Aaron Reed & Associates for the Monterey Bay Aquarium in support.
Thanks, Steve. Anyone else in support of the bill, we welcome you to the microphone at this time. As you can please state your first and last, along with your organization. All right, we're now going to turn it over to those who may be opposed or have challenges to the bill. We welcome you forward to the table. Last call. Bring it back to the committee. We do have a motion on the floor. And this motion by Senator Hertzberg is to return the bill to the Senate floor for consideration. We're going to go to a closing statement. Again, I want to say thank you to Senator Newman for his incredible work on this bill. Thank you. Please, sir, your closing statement.
My brief closing statement, Mr. Chair. This amendment builds on the very good work Senator Hertzberg did last year in preserving the critical funding for 19 checkoffs. This measure is to allow for the continued eligibility of charitable giving funds faced with delisting as a result of tax software changes well beyond their control. By solving this problem, this amendment will ensure that these worthy funds will be eligible to receive the charitable contributions of Californians on next year's returns. And I do thank you and respectfully ask your aye vote.
We have three motions on the floor right now. Again, Senator Newman, thank you so much for your work. Again, this is a return the bill. The motion is return the bill to the Senate floor for consideration by Senator Hertzberg. Roll call vote, please, Ms. Lanchester.
McGuire.
Aye.
McGuire, aye. Wynn. Aye. Wynn, aye. Bell. Hernandez. Aye. Hernandez, aye. Hertzberg.
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Lara.
Aye.
Lara, aye. Morlock. You have 5-0.
5-0. We're going to keep the roll open. We're going to wait and track down with the taser, Mr. Morlock and Mr. Bell. So we're going to be on the hunt for them in just a bit. We're going to take a brief break. Thank you so much. Miss Lanchester needs margaritas. So what? It's 10:30. So oh, she needs bourbon. She said, "All right." Brief break. We'll be reconvening here as soon as we hunt down Mr. Morlock and Mr. Bell. I think Annabelle Snyder likes that as well. The bourbon?
Yeah.
No. All right. Hey, there we go. All of a sudden, it got awkward.
Driving back Senator Bell right now.
What's that?
Services is driving back Senator Bell.
Okay.
Morlock's going through one. No, I can call.
Scott, should we hold it for a moment?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be reconvening the man, the myth, the legend from Orange County. Here is Mr. Morlock. We are excited that he is back and ready to roll. Mr. Morlock, we are looking at Senate Bill 503, which is Senator Newman. This is a motion to return the bill to the Senate floor for consideration. You have a bipartisan 5-0 vote at the time. Roll call vote, please, Ms. Lanchester. Hey, there we go.
Morlock.
Hey, all right, there we go. Again, group hug. Thank you so much, Mr. Morlock. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you for jumping down for budget sub. It's a busy day today. Hey, hot dang. All right, everybody. So what we're going to do, Ms. Lanchester, did you get that yet?
Yes.
You got the bourbon?
No.
All right. It's good stuff. We're going to take a brief break. We're going to reconvene here shortly. Mr. Bell is on his way, and we'll reconvene here in about 10-ish, 15-ish minutes. No worries, no worries.
There you go.
All right, everybody, we're going to be reconvening. We have some major votes that are going to be moving forward. We are going to first take a look at Senate Bill 567. This is a motion to adjudicate pass to appropriations. The current vote is 4-2. The chair voting aye. This is agenda item number one. Roll call, please, Ms. Lanchester.
Bell.
Aye.
Bell, aye.
5-2, that bill is out, and we're going to be closing the roll. Thank you so much, Mr. Bell. Our second and final item of the day is Senate Bill 503. This motion is a return the bill to the Senate floor for consideration. This currently has bipartisan support. Vote is 6-0. Ms. Lanchester, roll call vote, please.
Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye.
All right. That is a 7-0 vote. That bill is out. We're closing the roll. I want to say thank you to all sides for all the hard work. We do not have a hearing next week. So next couple of weeks will be dark, but we do have some oversight hearings that will be coming up in July. And we're very excited about all the assembly bills that are becoming the dozens and dozens. Thank you so much.